know what you're all thinking. That David Wilson has the best job in the world being the host of Grape Encounters Radio. But, you know, it's not all fun and games. A lot of work goes into putting together a radio show. And I was just thinking the other day, doggone it, I need a vacation. Problem is that to take an exotic vacation, it means that you're going to have to take, what, a week, 10 days off work? And so many people can't afford to do that because either their schedule or their budget does not permit it. You know, I was thinking about the idea of going away and checking out European wine country and how much fun I've had in the past doing that. And then it occurred to me that you can have a European wine vacation right here in California, where we broadcast Grape Encounters Radio. And I wanted to call my good friend Tom Silberkleidt, who is the publisher of the California Directory of Fine Wineries, and just pose to him the question, Tom, how can you take a European vacation right here in the good old U.S. of A? And I've got Tom on the line. And Tom, you've got the answers, right?
I've got a few answers.
What do you mean a few?
I've got a lot of answers.
Thank you, Tom. That's what I wanted to hear. No, seriously, it's funny. You go to some of these places, not just in the Northern California wine country like Napa, Sonoma, and Mendocino, but also on the Central Coast. There are a lot of places that really do emulate what you will find in Europe. And the truth is that if you plan your vacation correctly, you won't know that you're in California.
Well, absolutely. There are places that are here, and you can save yourself $1,600 in airfare by just taking a car ride to Napa, Sonoma counties and enjoying yourself, because there's a lot of diversity.
And you know what? If you save yourself $1,600, that'll buy you 800 bottles of Two-Buck Chuck.
Well done.
Which will last you, it'll last me for the rest of my life and then some.
Yeah, or one bottle of Screaming Eagle.
There you go. That's more like it. Okay, so where do we start?
Well, you know, it's all about the food, isn't it?
No, it's about the wine and then the food, but go ahead.
Okay, it's about the food and the wine, and we've got both in California wine country.
I know you do. In fact, there are so many restaurants in the big cities that say Napa-inspired cuisine.
And a lot of the inspiration for Napa-inspired cuisine comes from French food, and then they put a twist on it.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. So what are the places that you would send us to, and where are the wineries that you would want us to visit to have that European-style experience here?
First of all, when I think of Europe, I think of bread, and I think of cheese. And so there are some places in Napa and Sonoma that are making bread that you would kill for. I am telling you, you will never forget the quality and the delicious. You know, I'd rather have a good hunk of artisan bread and butter than a steak.
You see, and this is really the truth, Tom, is that on every European vacation that I've ever taken, it's the bread that's the standout. And I don't get it, really, why it's so hard to find or to make really good bread here, because those good loaves of bread are few and far between. But you're right. When you go up there, you'll start to find that. It's that really thin, crispy outer crust and the real soft, wonderful bread that soaks up the butter inside.
Oh, Dave, you're making my mouth water. Let me give you a few examples for your listeners. When you come up to Sonoma County, then I'll mention one in Napa County. This is a place in Petaluma in Sonoma County.
Petaluma,
Della Fattoria.
Really?
Isn't that a strange name? Della Fattoria Breads. The loaves are baked in brick ovens heated with wood fires. You can't beat that.
Yeah, yeah. A fattoria is a place where you go to get fat, by the way.
Of course it is. That's exactly what that sounds that way, at least.
All right.
The bread here is so good, you will not forget it. And you will pray that you can come back to Sonoma County just to have this bread again. You can't describe taste. You've got to taste it.
Wow.
Another place in Healdsburg, Sonoma County, up north near the Dry Creek area, Cousteau French Bakery. You know, they've been there for nearly 100 years. It's an outdoor bistro, breakfast anytime. But let me tell you, people love their French bread. Another place in the town of Sonoma, downtown, the Basque Boulangerie. If you've never been there, you've missed Sonoma. This is a hotbed of excitement. Their sourdough and sweet French bread are award-winning. Many of the restaurants serve their bread. Crust is delicious. Inside is soft. What I like to do sometimes is I'll show up there about midnight, 1 in the morning, when I have got the urge, and I'll look to make sure no one's around, and I'll give a few bucks to the baker who's working all night, and he'll give me a hot loaf of French bread right out of the oven. You would die and
Tom,
go to heaven.
Tom, you sly
for that.
Dog. You bribe the baker.
You got to. You got to do these things to get the hot bread, and they know it. They look around and they wink at you.
All right, so let's talk about the places that we're going to visit besides the bakeries on our European U.S. vacation.
Well, you know, one winery jumps out at me because the first time I ever saw this place, I said, where the heck am I? Is this Bordeaux? Jordan in Sonoma County.
Yeah, beautiful.
A Jordan winery, you get this long driveway up into the hill, and then you see glimpses of the chateau and the ivy growing on the side. Beautiful architecture. You feel like you're in France. Absolutely. Feels like it's an estate. And when you walk in, they treat you as if you're in an estate.
Do they treat you nice there?
Very first-class service, very polite, very nice. And it's by appointment. And they've got just a terrific tour. You know the wines. The wines have been gathering great reviews for many years.
Yeah, and you don't get a bad glass of Jordan wine. Doesn't happen.
No, it's very consistent. They've got a lot of history there. They've been around for decades.
You know, the other place that reminds me of is Chateau Montelena, which, of course, everybody knows Chateau Montelena and their wines. But, gosh, if you haven't been to the winery, what a great place to just go and bring a picnic. It is spectacular, and it definitely feels like Europe.
It does, and part of it is the architecture, the old stone building that makes you feel like you've gone back in time.
Okay, lay some more on me.
Napa Valley, you know, Rubicon, Francis Ford Coppola's beautiful estate. He spent years and years and years trying to put together the original estate property that had been sold off over the 20th century. And so here you've got this mansion from the 1880s that has been reassembled with all the wine properties, fountains, beautiful gardens out in the front, beautiful gift shop, beautiful tasting bar. I am telling you, the man's got class. This is a place that will make you feel like you've gone to the outskirts of Paris or the Loire Valley. It feels like France. It feels like Europe. And it's the type of place you can just stroll the grounds and think about the wine you just tasted there.
You know, a very interesting point is that so many of these places now are kind of like, you know, they've got that Barnes & Noble sort of mentality, which is, we want you to stay. We don't want to hurry you off. Because it used to be that you'd go into a tasting room and it was, okay, finish up your tasting, buy your wine, and go. But that's not the case anymore, is it?
No, they want you to stay. And a lot of the places have food pairings, not just a piece of cracker and some nuts, but I mean gourmet food pairings. Jay Vineyards and Winery in Healdsburg, you know, they've got some great, great sparkling wines, but they've got fantastic Pinot, fantastic. And they really were one of the first California wineries to get the food pairing idea. And they've got chefs that are making delicious gourmet treats that you can sit down and enjoy with your food. So it's...
Tom, you keep going back to food. I don't think you've eaten yet today.
You know, I haven't. I haven't. I
knew it.
I'm going to have something to eat as soon as we're done.
I knew it. We're talking to Tom Silberkleid, publisher of the California Directory of Fine Wineries. Check out his guides for Napa, Sonoma, and Mendocino, as well as the Central Coast. Tom, we got time for just a couple of more recommendations.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, cheese is a big deal in Northern California. Vela Cheese Company in the town of Sonoma, handmade since 1931. They're making some of the best cheese in the United States. You cannot believe the quality. Melts in your mouth. French cheese, you like soft cheeses, Marin French cheeses, just outside of Sonoma County. But if you like Camembert and soft, ripe cheeses, triple cream, this is another popular spot. So California, Northern California, when you're going to have your picnic, you get the fresh artisan bread, you go to the cheese factory, you buy the fresh cheese, and that's all you need, really.
Gosh, Tom, you make it sound so good. And remember, folks, right now is a great time to go up to California wine country because it's not wet there. It's not cold there. There's not big groups of people headed up there right now. It's off season, so the price is right. What a great time to go. If you really want to see some of these places, then you got to check out the California Directory of Fine Wineries. Tom's books really are the most beautifully photographed tour, I guess you could call them tour guide books in the business. Really, really beautiful. And they can find them online, Tom, at where?
Oh, Amazon. Amazon.com, or you can go to Barnes & Noble. A lot of independent bookstores, Whole Foods stores have the books. Bristol Farm stores have the books. They're available nationwide. And you can also look at our Facebook fan page, where every week we're posting events and specials that we hear about in the California wine country.
Yeah, there you go. And if you want to get acquainted with Tom and his products, you can go to GrapeEncounters.com, and there is a link. Tom, I don't know if you know this, but we put a link to your website there.
Thank you. That's great, David.
That's because we love you, Tom. Hey, Tom, I wish we had more time to talk to you. Unfortunately, we've got some other guests we've got to get to. It's Grape Encounters Radio. My guest has been Tom Silberkleid, publisher of the California Directory of Fine Wineries. Grape Encounters Radio is brought to you by EpicStyle.com. If you are living the wine lifestyle, you can't do it without EpicStyle.com. They have everything imaginable for wine lovers, for spirit and beer lovers. Check it out, EpicStyle.com. Nearly 2,000 products that will make wine drinking a whole lot more fun. Coming up, another author, Amy Riley. She is the author of the Love Diet Cookbook. She's got a new book coming out when we return with Grape Encounters. This little product is a big wow. The Amazing Napkin from JNC is a little larger than a breath mint until you wet it. Then it instantly expands into a soft, sturdy, and biodegradable hand towel. Carry it in your purse, glove box, golf bag, or tackle box. Keep a supply in the kitchen, bathroom, and garage. Delight your dinner guests. Take a moment to see the napkin in action at NapkinJNC.com. Get the year's coolest product at NapkinJNC.com or click the link at GrapeEncounters.com.
Just how well do you know this David Wilson? It seems pretty clear he shares your love of the vino lifestyle. Is he just another funny fellow with a face made for radio? Heck no. Is he all talk and no substance? Come on, you know better than that. Or do you? When it comes to having a Grape Encounter, there's so much more than meets the ear. That's why we're all over the World Wide Web. GrapeEncountersRadio.com is the wine lover's treasure chest. Resources including links to the people and places we talk about each week, an incredible gallery of photos, the blog, an online store with the hottest gadgets and wine reviews, and all of our past episodes, all presented in one place. Plus, we're on Facebook. Join the Facebook group page and connect with the Grape Encounters radio listening community. There's other perks, too. Win really nice wine-related prizes and possibly be featured on an upcoming broadcast. Remember, GrapeEncountersRadio.com and Grape Encounters Radio on Facebook. Like us. We love you.
You know, for most people, wine is more than just a beverage. It's a lifestyle, motivating enthusiasts to decorate in wine themes, collect the latest gadgets, and coordinate the table setting with wine glasses and accessories that celebrate the season or occasion. It's no wonder that EpicStyle.com is the hottest spot on the internet to shop for wine lifestyle products. Nothing compares to EpicStyle.com's selection of clever, functional, fun, and beautiful products for wine lovers. EpicStyle.com. It's a mighty good wine. And it's time for more Grape Encounters Radio. David Wilson here. I'll tell you what, from almost day one, one of my favorite guests to have on the show is the wonderful, lovable Amy Riley, the author of the Love Diet Cookbook. We have had Amy on so many times to tell you how you can use wines, champagnes, and food to rev up your romance. But guess what, folks? Amy's got a new book out. It's called Romancing the Stove. Love the title. Love Amy. And Amy, I'm so glad to have you on. I'm glad to see that you keep kicking these books out.
Is that what I do? I kick them out?
Yeah, kick them out. And not only that, apparently you're getting close to kicking something else out, too. Apparently the Love Diet's working on Amy Riley because Amy is with child, ladies and gentlemen, an exclusive here on Grape Encounters Radio.
This is what happens when you write an aphrodisiac cookbook.
Well, it certainly is when your significant other is your guinea pig, I suppose. Anyway, hey, do we know, is it a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Another child that will grow up to be an adult victim. Anyway, Romancing the Stove is filled with more recipes from the author of the famous, call it infamous, Love Diet Cookbook. And tell us the kinds of things that we can expect to find in the book, Amy.
Oh, well, Romancing the Stove really goes in depth into the history of aphrodisiacs and how they connect to romance and, you know, how you can get a little more romance in your life with recipes like sexy strawberry basil lemonade, sizzling mussels in exotic broth. Are you hungry yet? Should I keep going?
Well, I am, actually. Yeah, keep going. A couple more.
Keep going. Ooh, one of my favorites is Lady Killer chocolate layer cake, which actually can be made vegan.
Okay.
I don't make it vegan, but you can. There's a vegan version of that cake as well in the book. We believe in all types of eaters.
Who has more sensual vavoom, vegans or non-vegans?
You know what? I've never heard any formal study on this, but all the vegans really have it going on.
Really? Why?
Well, because to be honest, a lot of aphrodisiac science and a lot of the success of these ingredients really is based on eating a good, healthy diet, getting all of your nutrients and keeping your energy up and keeping your mood positive. And being vegan, you know, you're not eating a lot of the bad things. Generally,
the cool thing is that if you just drink wine and that's all you have, then it's not difficult to remain a vegan, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless a few bugs find their way into the bottle, and then you can't help.
Well, there is that, yes.
Okay, since we are a wine show, Amy, let's talk about the pairing of wines with the recipes in Romancing the Stove. How do we approach that?
Well, you know, and I think I've said this before on your show, I'm not a big proponent of a food and wine pairing. I'm more of a wine and person pairing or a wine and mood pairing. So I'd say, you know, pick the wine that suits your mood, or better yet, the person that you're trying to romance. Pick a wine that suits their taste and their mood, and also pick a recipe that you know they'll like. And usually you'll have some pretty good success.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because there are so many people who are so hung up on what should I pair with this and what should I pair with that. And
I know, it's so disappointing, because honestly, especially if you're going to try so hard to pair a wine with a food, and you're going to end up drinking something that you don't really like, or perhaps even eating something that you don't really like, why bother?
Well, and you know, it's the greatest dilemma of all when you go into a restaurant and they bring you the wine list even before sometimes they bring you the menu. They expect you to order the wine even before you've decided what you're going to eat. And so given that scenario, so many times I just go for my favorite cab or, you know, my favorite, you know, Meritage wine or something like that, not really considering the fact that I might be ordering, let's say, Chilean sea bass, which might not work with that. But in my mind, if I like the wine and I like the food, then I'm going to do the pairing in my head, and it really doesn't matter what some, quote, wine expert tells me I'm supposed to drink with what I'm eating.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, the studies show that with the proper balance of acidity and salting your food and all of those things, you can make most things balanced. There are a few odd things like smoked salmon and Cabernet. I get a metallic taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
You know, there are a few little oddities like that, but for the most part, and sometimes desserts can make a wine taste pretty terrible. But otherwise, really, I mean, if you look at it from a basic scientific standpoint, there's not really much to it.
It boils down to what you like. The book is Romancing the Stove. The author is Amy Riley. Don't question her credentials, because she has a better education in the subject of the aphrodisiac qualities in food and wine than really anybody on the planet. She knows what she's talking about. I've tried her recipes myself, and I take her advice. And I must say, I'm a much better romantic person today since I've met Amy. That's true.
Ooh.
I take your advice,
wow.
Amy. Hey, one very quick question before we go, and that's this. You know, I love to cook for people. As a guy, I like to have people come over and then cook in the kitchen. But one of the things that I find is that as I'm cooking, you know, everything's hot. You know, your hair starts to fall into your eyes. You're making a mess. The kitchen doesn't look very good. Is it better just to prep everything first and get it all done before your guest arrives?
Yes, I like to prep and then put on my lipstick.
Prep, put on your lipstick, and then just pop it into the oven. That's all you do.
Exactly.
So the dishes should be done really before your guest comes over.
I like to, or alternatively, choose something that's interactive that the two of you can do together.
Okay, I like it. The book, Romancing the Stove, the author, Amy Riley, or you can go to the website, eatsomethingsexy.com, for tons of really free information you don't have to pay for, and it will work for you, and you will love me and Amy for sending you there. Amy, hey, thanks for being on Grape Encounters. I really appreciate it.
You bet. I love being here.
Okay, and coming up appropriately in the next segment, it's Becky Bleibaum from the Tragon Corporation talking about the debate between cork versus screw cap.
When people say you're aging like fine wine, they may be implying that you're getting complex and a little fruity. This is Grape Encounters Radio.
Wow, fall is here. The perfect time of year to escape to an island getaway. Forget flying south or west to some far-off island. Catalina Express makes it easy, fun, and affordable to escape to Catalina Island, where you can bask in the sun, ride the EcoTour zip line, or explore the island on your own kayak. Catch Catalina in a fall frame of mind. There's nothing better. And for those lucky enough to have a birthday this time of year, you get to ride for free on your special day when you pre-register online. Catalina Express has multiple departures daily from Long Beach, San Pedro, and Dana Point. You can even upgrade your excursion for a small fee and enjoy the Commodore's Lounge. Catalina Express has been cruising to Catalina Island for 30 years, so you can depend on them for great service and an outstanding time. For more info about schedules, fares, hotel packages, and activities, go to catalinaexpress.com. You can even book online.
It's so easy to go to Catalina, Catalina Express, Catalina.
Lots of wineries talk about growing great grapes. This winery talks about growing great wines. Sarlos & Sons in Los Olivos, California, grows great wine, period. This family winemaking operation doesn't have a traditional mission statement. They have a family creed. Live to honor those that come before us and prepare the way for those yet to come. It's with this sense of pride that Sarlos & Sons grows great wine. Grapes grown in the shadow of the farmer ensures the highest quality of grapes are used in Sarlos & Sons wines. Check them out at sarlosandsons.com and also be sure to check out their once-in-a-lifetime wines. Sarlos & Sons is a dream coming true, and they can help make your dreams come true with their exclusive once-in-a-lifetime wines, which commemorate those unrepeatable, unforgettable moments in your life. Learn more about this and more at sarlosandsons.com. That's S-A-A-R-L-O-O-S and sons.com.
I have to tell you that old habits die hard, and no matter how much I try, no matter how much I force myself to be open-minded and objective, I still have so much trouble with screw caps on wine. It's David Wilson. Grape Encounters continues, and you know, I truly, truly have to tell you that I'm not a pretentious person. I'm just not. I'm very easygoing when it comes to wine. But every time I twist off a screw cap and hear that crunching sound, I just feel like something's missing. And for a long time, I was saying that I just think that people really, really prefer cork over screw caps. And that was just pure conjecture on my part until, over a year ago, I came across a study by a company called the Tragon Corporation in Redwood City, California. We got on the air actually multiple times. Becky Bleibaum, she's the VP of Tragon. They're a very, very highly respected firm that studies consumer behavior and preferences. And they have done multiple studies on the consumer preferences of cork over screw caps. Actually, the study was to see which one they actually preferred. And they've got a new study out, so we got to update you all. And Becky, Happy New Year, and welcome back to Grape Encounters.
Happy New Year. I'm always good to talk to you, David.
God, I love talking to you because you're the one person when everybody beats me up about this cork versus screw cap thing that I can turn to, and I say, I got an expert. You know, I know somebody who knows more than you do, and that's you, Becky.
Well, you know, I mean, we do this research just to understand consumers' perceptions. I mean, we don't try to bias it. We're just trying to discover what people really want and how they view these two closures or three closures, if you include synthetic.
Okay, so in a nutshell, the study that you did a few years back looked at not just consumer preferences in the United States, but you also did France, England, and Australia.
Right. We wanted to do a global piece of research because we do a lot of global work, and we knew that consumers had different views and different experiences with screw cap versus natural cork around the world.
And I think predictably in that study, the Brits and the Australians tended to side together, and though it might surprise some, the Americans and the French were more closely aligned.
That's right. The French pretty much rejected screw cap, and the U.S. was somewhere in the middle, a little bit closer to France, but certainly not nearly as accepting as the U.K. and Australia.
Yeah, so the way that the consumers reacted in those two pairings, America and France versus Britain and Australia, very close, right?
Very close, and, you know, we looked at it. One of the things we've talked about over the years is looking at it by usage occasion. For special occasion versus not. France, for everyday usage or any usage, they had very little use for screw cap, whereas the U.S. had a little bit more tolerance for the everyday occasions, the informal types of occasions. But they were pretty close.
So in a nutshell, if I'm going to take a bottle of wine to a tailgate party, just getting together with friends for a casual barbecue out in the backyard, screw cap, not so bad. If I'm going on a hot date, if I'm having the boss over for dinner, if it's an important occasion, screw cap, verboten.
Absolutely. And I think it goes to just the perceived quality of the wine inside the bottle, that consumers think that if it has a screw cap, the wine itself is of lower quality.
Okay, so 94% of the respondents in this most recent survey said that they would be more likely to purchase wine with natural cork, and a nearly equal number, 93%, said that the natural cork conveys high or very high quality. So it's definitely a status thing.
Mm-hmm. Overwhelmingly, those are high numbers. When you get 94% of consumers agreeing on anything, that's pretty overwhelming.
That's off the charts. I mean, that's absolutely off the charts. It's so amazing. Then there's synthetics. Now, where do the consumers stand when synthetics are considered?
Well, synthetics are a pretty good alternative to natural cork, partly because they've tried to make them look like a natural cork, but it includes some other types of features. But, over the years, probably the biggest fluctuation in all of the wine closures is synthetic, because it includes so many different styles of synthetics, and companies have anything from rubber stoppers to things that look and feel a lot more like cork. So that's a pretty big category, and they've also made some big improvements over the years and listened to consumers in their development.
Now, as I understand it, 60% of your respondents said they wouldn't give a wine as a gift that had a synthetic closure, and then a whopping 78% said no way on screw caps for wine gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Whew.
Overwhelming. It really, if you look at that from a business perspective, and which one would you put on your bottle to satisfy consumers, it would not be the screw cap. And it's not to say that screw cap doesn't have a place and a purpose. It just means that there's a tremendous amount of consumer education that's required to say, if you just have the liquid in the glass, can you have the same quality of wine with the different closures? But right now, for purchase and just perceptual, it's screw caps have a long way to go.
We are talking to Becky Bleibaum. She's VP of Tragon Corporation, which just released the results of a study in December comparing consumer preferences of screw caps versus corks versus synthetics. The synthetic thing really rubs me the wrong way, because you can't necessarily know for sure that the wine has a synthetic cork in it until you pull it out. And it doesn't say on the bottle, does it?
No, it doesn't say on the bottle, and that's one of the things that some folks are considering doing, is a bottle with a natural cork. Would that help consumers understand that, versus when you get a synthetic or a plastic closure?
That's a great idea. That's a great idea, and I think it actually ought to be a rule, because with a synthetic, you've got the foil over the bottle neck, so you can't see the cork inside the bottle. You don't know whether it's synthetic. And I'll tell you, it's strange, but when I take the foil off and I pull out a cork and it's synthetic, I just kind of do a little, you know, it's a little sigh of like, why? Why did they do that? And I don't know. I am a snob. I am, aren't I?
Well, but, you know, I kind of feel the same way. That I've had so many things. It just seems like it's a cheaper alternative. And, you know, again, it goes back to the winemakers and trying to make sure that they feel they're protecting their wines and delivering to the consumer what they've blended and what they've made. But the natural cork has so much history. It's such a part of the whole ritual and the experience that I think it does change your perspective a little bit when you get something other than a natural cork.
Okay, so here's the part of it that kind of makes me ask a few questions. It's the idea that in your study, more than, about half of the participants said they spend $9 to $15 on a bottle of wine, but they seldom spend more than $25. And I guess this study was conducted up in your area, right?
This was San Francisco, Chicago. So yes.
Okay, so they're both cities that are used to spending a little bit more for wine. So what makes the study even more interesting is that these would be considered to be, you know, lower cost wines, and even in that category, there's an overwhelming preference for cork.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you remember last time, David, we had a segment of the population. The whole idea, the winemakers said, we think that screw caps are most appropriate for people that are knowledgeable about wine, are willing to spend more for wine, and you know, they understand why we're doing screw cap. Well, we found just the opposite, that people that were spending the higher amounts really absolutely wanted natural cork. The only time that screw caps came in was people that were purchasing the less expensive wines. We didn't even see that trend this time, that, you know, across the board, people are still asking for natural cork.
Is there any kind of ulterior motive that you suspect on the part of the winemakers? Is it cheaper to put a screw cap on a bottle? Is there something underlying this trend to put more and more screw caps on bottles that we're not thinking about?
Well, yes, that's not my area of expertise, but I can tell you that natural corks are certainly more expensive. You get the high-quality corks are absolutely more expensive than screw cap or synthetic.
Come on, Becky. There's got to be a conspiracy theory here somewhere that you can lead us down this path. And we'll blow the lid on this story as soon as we figure out what the conspiracy is.
Yeah. Well, and you know, one of the things I should say in full disclosure is that the first two studies, we did this study in 2004. We did it again in 2007. And Tragon paid for that research because we wanted to make sure that people were aware of consumers' opinions and really just try to provide a service to the industry. Now, the 2011 study, the Court Quality Council approached us and said, can you update your research? So we said, yeah, we'll field basically the same piece of research, and then, you know, we're just going to try to find out the true perception. So even though they funded this research, it had no impact on the results. We fielded it the same way we did the previous 2 years. And just trying to understand what consumers were saying.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. And for those of you who are passionate about cork versus screw caps versus synthetics, go check out the entire study. It's online at Tragon's website, which is
Tragon, TRAGON.com.
Yeah, it's right there. Read it. It'll blow your shorts off. I'm telling you, it's very interesting stuff. And I will tell you also that no matter what you think consumers feel about the subject, it's much, much worse than you thought. Or better than you thought, actually, for those of us who love corks. It's better than you thought. You know what? There is hope, and not everything is going down the toilet. So you consumers who love cork, raise your glasses and occupy Napa, occupy Sonoma, and tell them, no more screw caps, that you want cork. That's it. What do you say, Becky? Will you be out there with your sign with me? Oh, you can't. You have to remain objective. I'm sorry. That's how you make your living.
Well, I just, you know, we're just trying to get information out to the people that can use it.
Well, tell you what, I'm very happy to do my part to spread this information, because the more that people know about this, the more they're going to resist the screw cap. And by the way, I'm going to take so much heat for this after this show airs. It's going to be a bloodbath, but I don't care. Bring it on. I don't like them. And I do drink screw cap wines. I do, you know.
I do as well.
But I cover the top of the bottle with a towel. That's it. So happy to have Becky Bleibaum from Tragon Corporation on. Always very revealing.
Thank you, Dave.
We Why do we buy the wines we do? What makes us buy sweet or dry? That has been the subject of significant study. When buying wine for ourselves, most of us reach for a wine we're familiar with. No risk, no anxiety. But let's say you're hosting some old friends and are trying to find an appropriate wine. After scanning the wine selection, you grab something funny or tasty, not too expensive, and throw a great party. But the stakes get much higher when your picky boss comes for dinner. Now, this is where stress kicks in, since much is on the line. Behavior experts say that in this situation, most of us would never go light and whimsical. Instead, we'll go classy and expensive. Yep, sometimes wine choice is based on a desire to impress and attain a higher station in life. Recently, researchers found that U.S. consumers faced with bewildering wine choices first look for a wine they have prior experience with. The second strongest impulse is to follow the recommendation of a friend or store clerk. The third influence is wine varietal. According to some studies, gender influences how wine is chosen. Oddly enough, they say a man is more likely to ask for direction, while women who buy more than half the wine in America often base their choices on a wine's label. Whatever your motivation, if you stay away from the bottom shelf, the odds are you'll find something that you'll like, since there's never been more great wine to choose from. So go ahead, try a new winemaker, because it often pays to be a risk taker. This is David Wilson, and we'll be back in just a sec.
Wine is like the opera. You can enjoy it even if you don't understand it. Grape Encounters Radio. We're happy to explain anything you don't understand in plain English.
This is the time of year when wine lovers start planning their pilgrimage to California's wine regions. The perfect inspiration and companion is the California Directory of Fine Wineries. Featured are profiles of dozens of Central Coast and Northern California wineries, along with hundreds of color images by renowned photographer Robert Holmes. Plus, highlights of tours, tastings, maps, and events. These beautiful directories make a fantastic gift. Be sure to like the California Directory of Fine Wineries Facebook fan page for wine country news and events each week. Click on the link at GrapeEncountersRadio.com.
You know, for most people, wine is more than just a beverage, it's a lifestyle. Motivating enthusiasts to decorate in wine themes, collect the latest gadgets, and coordinate the table setting with wine glasses and accessories that celebrate the season or occasion. It's no wonder that epicstyle.com is the hottest spot on the internet to shop for wine lifestyle products. Nothing compares to epicstyle.com's selection of clever, functional, fun, and beautiful products for wine lovers. epicstyle.com.
Tired of being caught unprepared? Want to be a good scout? That's what we thought. With Napkin by JNC Enterprises, you can be Johnny on the spot and be prepared for unexpected messes. The Napkin is one very clever product. These little beauties are barely the size of a small breath mint, but they come to life as a durable, convenient, and sturdy hand towel with just a few drops of water. You'll want to keep a supply of napkins everywhere you would keep a hand towel, paper towel, wash rag, or moist towelette. Napkin is all of these things in one very compact little tablet. Use it to wipe greasy hands, remove makeup, and even to entertain dinner guests. You never know when Napkin will come in handy. Get Napkin at NapkinJNC.com. It's completely eco-friendly and made of 100% recycled paper. Clean your environment and keep the environment clean with Napkin from NapkinJNC.com.
It is Grape Encounters Radio, David Wilson, and you know that I love to talk about gadgets and goodies that are designed to complement the wine drinking experience, and that is why, oh, just a little less than a year ago, we recruited one Matt Dubow. He's the guy who runs epicstyle.com. They are the biggest supplier and producer of wine-related paraphernalia, accessories, and goodies on planet Earth. And Matt is also known amongst his closest friends as the gadget guru, because nobody knows more about these cool things than Matt. Hey, Matt, welcome back to Grape Encounters Radio. We are now in a new year, and a new year means lots of really cool new goodies from Epic Style, right?
Yes, it does.
But here's the thing, you know, when we first started, I asked you the question. I said, how many things do you have anyway? And you said, I think maybe around 2,000. I think you've mushroomed to about 3,000 now.
We're not there yet. We're working on it. Hopefully one day we'll get there.
It's really funny because I decided today that I was going to, put you through your paces in terms of, little history of gadgets and goodies that relate to wine.
Okay.
Are you worried?
I'm always worried when you come with.
But here's the funny thing, you know, when I started digging into history, pre-epicstyle.com, turns out there really haven't been that many gadgets and goodies prior to you and your family getting on the scene. Did you know that?
There have been a few.
Well, like the corkscrew and glasses, it turns out. That's about it.
Well, you have VacuVin was pretty prominent. I think a big change in the industry was when Screwpull came out, which is owned by the company La Crusade. I think they were a game changer years ago with their design and style.
Okay. But largely, you know, there certainly weren't thousands of products. There weren't hundreds of products. There weren't dozens of products, just a few. So first question for you, Matt.
Yes.
What do a musket and a wine bottle have in common?
Well, I believe the first corkscrew was made from the screw from a musket.
The worm. It's actually called a worm is the technical term. Yeah. That's what you call it now, right?
Correct.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of containers besides wine bottles had corks in those days as well, beer, medicine, cosmetics, even food. And so they used it for that. Okay, well, you know what? That was an easy one.
Okay,
this gets tougher, though. Matt Dubow, what do Englishman Samuel Henschel, Frenchman Francois Revert, German Benjamin Lowe, Canadian William Addison, and American M.L. Byrne have in common?
Do they all have some sort of patent that has to do with the corkscrew?
Holy smoke! I swore you wouldn't get that one. I swore you wouldn't get that one. You're right. They all have patents on different kinds of corkscrews. You are right. I can't believe you got that. I'm so impressed.
Was a good guess.
So tell me a few things that you've got coming out that probably need patents.
Well, I think our biggest item, and I know we've talked about this before, are our cork cages. They're probably our number one items. And we have some new ones that actually have chalkboards on them that you can write a little thing, and they come with a piece of chalk.
So I've actually seen those, and I love those. Those are very, very nice.
Oh, they're doing fabulous.
Very, very nice.
Another big item that we've had for a long time are our wine bottle candelabras, which hold either tea light or a taper candle, and you put the candelabra into an empty bottle.
Those are really, really terrific. And in fact, if you're going on a picnic someplace, you can actually just stick one of those in the picnic bag because they don't take up very much space. And then after you're through pouring the wine, you stick the candelabra in the bottle. You will impress somebody with this. You will impress everybody with this.
People love these things.
Apart from this, you have all of your different lines of products that commemorate different occasions, different holidays, different moods and themes. You've got a lot more of those coming out now, right?
We always have more collections. We have three or four different collections. We have Beach Bumming Collection that is kind of a beachy theme, obviously. Keynote, which has to do with keys. Wine Estate, which is just a different pattern that has old-time wine feel and look on it. Rock and Roll, which is kind of flames and guitars.
By the way, I totally, totally like that theme. And last week, by the way, we did Wines That Rock, so we probably should have featured that product on that show.
All right, we had talked about that.
I know, I screwed up. Sorry.
And another hot category, we have made a bunch of wine signs that are little wood signs that you can hang or place in your house.
Okay, what's your favorite?
Wine Snobs Have More Fun.
Oh, I thought yours was going to say, no, I'm not really blasted. Well, you're not a wine snob. All right, here's another quiz question for you, Matt.
Okay.
It's Matt Dubow of EpicStyle.com, the preeminent supplier and producer of really fun stuff for wine lovers, also spirit lovers and beer drinkers, too. Matt, steel tanks for making wine, fermenting wine,
right,
were not used for wine until when? The 1800s? The 1920s? The 1950s or the 1980s?
I would say the 1980s.
The 1980s? Oh, Matt, you just fell off the turnip truck.
Oh.
Well, actually, Matt, the steel tanks were introduced in the 1950s.
Oh.
It was the 1950s.
Okay,
one more for you, Matt.
Sounds good.
In the past, wine was commonly fermented in redwood and concrete tanks. Is that true or false?
I personally haven't heard anything about concrete tanks. But you always try to trick me, so I have to say true.
You're right. That's 3-for-1. All right, the bonus round, Matt Dubois. If you get this right, I'm going to bring you 3 bottles of Two Buck Chuck. All right, Matt Dubois, who made the first wine glasses? Was it the French, the Italians, the English, or the colonists?
I would have to say the French.
Nope. The Italians, actually. It was the 14th century merchants of Venice that set a new standard of elegance in wine drinking by combining the skills of their glassblowers and designers there. Matt, one last thing that we can talk about is your glasses. You've got all kinds of interesting hand-painted glasses and other stuff. Give us the rundown.
We do. And we actually have a couple of new styles, and I know one that you actually really like had to do with our other kind of music collection was Rhythm and Wine.
Yes.
That has musical notes all over the wine glass and a nice red stem. So that's probably one of the new hot items. And also a preview, I should be doing this probably within the next couple of weeks, is personalized coasters.
What? I can have my name on it?
You can have your name on it. And we should have that ready to go in the next couple of weeks.
Check it all out at epicstyle.com. You know what? I'm not just saying it. This is the best site to buy wine-related products. Not making it up. Very cool stuff, Matt. You're to be congratulated.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Matt, so glad to have you on. I will send your prize in the mail.
Oh.
You will get it. It's not going to be very big.
But in the mail.
This is the best you've done on a quiz so far, Matt. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters Radio. Matt will be back next week. I am so excited to hear what he has to say when we return with Grape Encounters Radio.
At no time were any animals harmed during the making of today's show. However, countless grapes were crushed and mutilated. This is Grape Encounters Radio.